everyone. Welcome to the September 16th meeting of the Sport One City Council. Would you please call the roll?
Here.
Here.
Here. Welcome, everyone. We have a single item on the council calendar this afternoon, and I'll have Carla read it in a moment. I just want to welcome you all here. Just basic ground rules for those of you that may not be frequent visitors here. If you're here to testify on this item, you just need only give Carla your name, and she'll put you on the list. And likewise, when you testify, we typically allow 3 minutes for individual testimony. It doesn't look like there's so many people here that will be a problem. Again, need only give us your name, no need for addresses and such, unless you're a registered lobbyist, in which case you need to disclose who you are here on behalf of. We maintain the rules of decorum in this room, so if you agree with someone and feel compelled that you want to show it, feel free to give them a wave of the hand or thumbs up. And likewise, if you disagree with someone and want to show it, a polite hand gesture to the negative is fine, but we don't make vocal demonstrations in favor or against our fellow citizens' points of view in this room so that the council gets to hear all of them. That's about all there is to it. So, Carla, would you please read the item?
Item 966. Adopt regulations for marijuana license procedures and requirements.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor Hales, and welcome, everybody. Last year, Oregonians and over 70% of Portlanders voted to legalize recreational marijuana. So it's now the city's turn to put a framework in place to regulate and license the sale and distribution of marijuana within our city limits. And, of course, we have previously been strong supporters of medical marijuana and that those dispensaries have been operating for some time. I'm very pleased to now be in charge of the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, which is in the capable staff who have been managing this project. So I want to start by thanking Claire Adamsick and Tom Bazot on my staff, and also Teresa Marchetti, Victor Salinas, Amy Archer, and Amalia Alacon de Mars, and pretty much the rest of the entire Bureau who've been working on this for several months. And thank you for all of your good work. The Office of Neighborhood Involvement staff are in a good position to balance industry interests and small business opportunities with livability concerns that go hand in hand with regulating a vice like liquor and now marijuana. And so I'm going to invite the staff to come up to the table, please. We're going to hear from our staff for about 30 minutes. Colleagues, I'd ask you to hold your questions until the end because it's a fairly extensive presentation, and I believe you'll get many of your questions answered. At the end, I have a few minor amendments to propose, and copies of those are available with the council clerk as well as have been distributed to you. Then we'll have time for council questions. We have an invited panel, and then we'll open it up for testimony and come back with more discussion at the end.
Thank you. Teresa, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. Good afternoon, council members. I'm Teresa Marchetti. I'm the Livability Programs Manager for the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, overseeing the marijuana policy program, or the development of the marijuana policy program. Thank you for the opportunity to present the proposed framework for the regulatory licensing and requirement for recreational marijuana businesses and medical dispensaries within the city of Portland. As you know, this council approved the development of the marijuana policy program within the Livability Center of the Office of Neighborhood Involvement in November of 2014. For those of you who have not been following it as closely, I'd like to provide a little bit of legislative background. So in 2014, the legislature passed Senate Bill 1531, which legalized the sale of medical marijuana from marijuana dispensaries. At that point, recreational marijuana and the use of it was still illegal. In November of 2014, Measure 91 was passed by the voters, which legalized the personal use and growing of marijuana and also provided a framework for regulating the sale and distribution of marijuana that was largely modeled after the Liquor Control Act. In 2015 legislative session, House Bill 3400 was passed. This effectively modified Measure 91 and Senate Bill 1531 in a couple of ways that are important for our conversation today. First of all, it requires a land use compatibility statement from the local government before a state issues a recreational license. It also allows local governments the option of opting out of housing one or more of the license types. It allows local governments to regulate the business operations, often called the time, place, and manner, of retailers, wholesalers, producers, processors, and also medical dispensaries. It also allows local governments to entertain the idea of a 3% recreational or a 3% tax on recreational marijuana with a referral to the voters. And finally, it allows local governments to create a 1,000-foot buffer between recreational retail locations in order to address and reduce the possibility of saturation. In addition to that, the legislature also passed Senate Bill 460. We're in an arena right now where actually the recreational system will not be up and running until January of 2016. So the legislature passed sort of a stopgap that would allow the sale of limited recreational marijuana from existing medical dispensaries beginning on October 1st of 2015, which is coming very quickly. That will be tax-free until December 31st of 2015. Then through 2016, it will be taxed at 25%, sunsetting December 31st of 2016. I'd also like, just for your information and for context for our discussion, to reference the federal landscape of marijuana. It currently is still illegal federally, but there was a set of guidelines that was released from the district attorney that is lovingly referred to as the Cole Memo that outlined several priorities for prosecution, for federal prosecution. And those also provided some guidance for jurisdictions that were looking to legalize marijuana within the states.
I think you said district attorney. I think you meant attorney general.
So thank you, sir. Yes, thank you. So some of those include preventing revenue from the sale of marijuana from going to criminal enterprises, preventing diversion of marijuana from states that had legalized to states that have not legalized or just across state lines in general, preventing the authorized marijuana activity in states to be being used as a pretext to cover other illegal activity, preventing violence in the cultivation of marijuana, and also preventing youth access. So to give you an idea about what the landscape of marijuana looks like in Portland specifically, we currently have 132 medical dispensaries that are registered with the state. 120 are operating. We do know that there are current compliance issues with some of those locations. Some of them are not adhering to some of the state regulations. We also know that Portland houses about 40% of the retail alcohol market, so we assume that marijuana will be located here in similar numbers. We also are in a landscape where local jurisdictions can opt out of licensing. And we've had, as of drafting this, there were about 25 local jurisdictions that have prohibited licensing within their boundaries, so primarily Southern Oregon. It's unclear what jurisdictions within the metro area will be efforting that.
Teresa, can you just give us a quick flavor of what some of those current compliance issues are, just the categories, or do you do that later?
I can now.
Just a thumbnail sketch.
Sure. They're currently within the OHA's parameters. There is a 1,000-foot buffer between dispensaries. Some dispensaries are not in compliance with that. Some dispensaries are operating without being registered at all, so completely unlicensed. So the framework that we are proposing today goes to address a number of different elements. We think that Portland has a clear interest in regulating the marijuana industry as it integrates into our commercial corridors. First of all, to encourage the responsible integration of the industry, but also at the same time addressing those environmental impacts that could potentially have adverse effects on livability or public safety. We're also concerned about the security of the industry itself. And as well, we think that this is an excellent opportunity to really establish what the community expectations are going to be around this issue. There's a wide variety of opinions, and the Office of Neighborhood Involvement is in a unique position to be able to mediate those. In addition, we have also provided some recourse for Portland communities to address the unlicensed locations. Currently, the Oregon Health Authority and the Oregon Liquor Control Commission have no statutory authority to address anything but their licensees or registrants. So really what we want to do here is create a roadmap for success. We know this is what you're seeing, this graphic, this bell curve of behavior is a well-established concept within the social sciences. There's always going to be about 10% of actors that act outside the law within the gray areas, within the loopholes, and that's going to require some level of enforcement. There's also the 10% of good actors that, regardless of the rules, are going to go above and beyond to meet the community expectations and to run safe and livable businesses. It's that 80% in between that falls on can be motivated by rules and community standards as long as they understand what those are. And we hope that this is the beginning of that discussion. So to illuminate more on what the nuts and bolts are of the regulation that we are proposing, I'd like to introduce Victor Salinas. He's our marijuana policy program coordinator.
Good afternoon, and again, my name is Victor Salinas, for the record. And I am the Marijuana Policy Program Coordinator for the City of Portland. I'd like to take the opportunity to share the proposed marijuana regulatory license requirements, which would be for medical dispensaries, those who sell marijuana and marijuana items through the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act, or patient card holders and caregivers over 21. This also includes licensing of marijuana retailers who sell marijuana and marijuana items to general public over 21. In addition, we'll be offering licenses for marijuana processors who are focused on the production of marijuana items, including edibles and concentrates, and as well as marijuana wholesalers who transfer marijuana from producers and processors to the retailers. And, of course, licensing marijuana producers who are in charge of growing or cultivating marijuana. It is worth noting that the city is not regulating growers and producers currently under the medical marijuana system, since that is out of our scope of authority and covered under federal law or on patient protection with HIPAA. I'd like to move on to discuss a little bit of the proposed minimum standards to process a license application. This is an initial evaluation criteria that also serves as the criteria for the land use compatibility statement that will be processing as part of the state license, and will be working and will be part of the concurrent process running with the city's proposed license. So this initial criteria includes ensuring that proposed businesses are within a fixed location, so no mobile or satellite locations would be allowed. In addition, based on language from House Bill 3400, businesses would not be able to site within less than 1,000 feet from schools.
Victor, this without getting too technical, how do you calculate 1,000 feet?
Is it that would be as the crow flies.
Just to note, Council and those watching, everything that's in blue is in state law. So those are things that are mandatory that we are not allowed to change. Other parts of our proposal that are not in blue are things that we can discuss as to whether we want to do it or not.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. The next component of the minimum standards would be that marijuana business retailers be at least 1,000 feet from another marijuana business retailer, and that was through the authority granted to the city by our home rule and by through language in House Bill 3400, as well as a minimum distancing of 1,000 feet between medical dispensaries, and that is per Senate Bill 1530. In addition to that, we also have another component which includes language on zoning, and that ensures that businesses do not zone within residential zoning RF through RH, and that is per state statute prohibiting licenses to zone in areas that are exclusively zoned for residential use. And again, just to clarify, this would be the criteria that we also use to go through the evaluation process for the land use compatibility statement. In terms of the proposed application procedure for marijuana regulatory licenses, all applicants must submit City of Portland forms developed by the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. They have to present a business license, where applicable, a change of use permit, proof of an alarm permit, a lease showing authorization for use of the property owner, and the application fee. For those applying for a producer or processor license, they will need to show all appropriate permits are being obtained or have been obtained. And in order to proactively address safety concerns and nuisance activity, we are including a component that we have identified as a marijuana control plan to address security. And this would be for retailers and for medical dispensaries, that the plan would include language on how the businesses plan to address security measures, minor access or restricting minor access, how they plan to address trash in the surrounding areas of the in and around the business, and another safety component commonly known as SEPTED, or the crime prevention through environmental design, to minimize any safety concerns or to address safety concerns and minimize nuisance activity.
Victor, does the requirement that the applicant submit a lease showing authorization, is that for the specific use of a marijuana dispensary, or can it be just for any commercial use?
That would be for the specific use of a marijuana dispensary or a marijuana business retail or retail business. I'd like to follow with some of the proposed notification process that we've identified through our public involvement process to address help mitigate community concerns and serve as a bridge between the industry and community as we integrate this new industry into the Portland business community. That component includes that all applicants, as we go through the application process, the director shall provide a notice of application before a final decision is made to the Police Bureau, the Bureau of Fire and Rescue, the Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services, and the Bureau of Development Services.
The next slide, please.
Thank you. For medical dispensaries and for marijuana retailers, we've also included the component to help address and mitigate community and industry relationship, that property owners and property occupants within 300 feet of the proposed license premise be notified by mail. And the other component that is incorporated is that district coalition offices and neighborhood associations in which the marijuana regulatory licensee is located or proposed to be located, that they will be receiving a notice in the mail notifying them about the name of the property, contact information, as well as how they can obtain the marijuana control plan that addresses the safety and livability concerns.
Commissioner Fritz, on the question of notice to coalition offices and neighborhood association, is there any reason why we don't expand that to include a business association if it falls within one of the 50 districts?
Actually, Commissioner, I was just about to add my piece of this and say that we are going to be directing the district coalition to be notifying the business association. Of course, there isn't necessarily going to be one in all areas, but where there is, the administrative direction to the district coalition will be to make sure that the business association will be noticed. Of course, adjacent businesses will get the written notice.
Thank you.
Thank you both. And lastly, the other form of notification will be a posting of a public notice where the marijuana regulatory license is located or proposed to be located. So once we go through the process, the evaluation process for the licenses, upon a presentation of a state approval and payment of the licensing fee, then the City of Portland would issue the license if all components are met satisfactorily to establish a location within the Portland city limits. At this time, I'd like to move on to share on our public involvement process, and I'd like to take the opportunity to thank all the representatives from identity and culturally specific groups, as well as the industry that participated and helped shape the policy that we are proposing before you today. We did this through engagement through a town hall series that involved three town halls in Southwest Portland, in East Portland, and in North Portland to ensure that we were reaching the broader community. We had approximately 100 participants throughout the three town halls and addressed many concerns that we'll be sharing with you shortly. As part of the involvement process, we also convened a community stakeholder work group that met over a period of 11 weeks, and we had approximately five meetings, and we addressed a series of concerns that both from the industry side and the community side, addressing livability and safety concerns. We also did targeted outreach to approximately 635 contacts to inform of the development of these policies and how we were advancing in the process. And we did this through social media, through Nextdoor, through Facebook, through Twitter, as well as phone calls, emails, and in-person communications. And we feel that the regulatory system that we're presenting before you today is reflective of the collaborative effort through this public involvement process and the input that we received. In terms of some of the feedback that we heard, the main themes were to avoid preferential treatment for existing medical dispensaries opting into soft start sales through regulations by October 1st, 2015. Another point raised was to work with the state to ensure that the soft start does not encourage the illegal market, ensuring that the marijuana control plan does not unreasonably affect business operations, address social environments, including smoking lounges and events responsible for consumption, which is something that we plan to do as part of our next steps as we reconvene the stakeholder work group, and that we use an equity lens to create opportunity for small growers, emerging business owners, and communities of color to access the market, as well as women-owned businesses. In addition, we plan to address another point raised continuously, which was to address education about marijuana addiction and prevention awareness, and to address components that would ensure that we limit saturation of adult businesses like bars, marijuana retailers, and lottery establishments in the city. We also heard concerns to support legal businesses and go after the bad actors, because as we know from other enforcement programs that we have, that the program is only as good as its enforcement. And, of course, reminding our community members here that the reason why this program has been we were asked to house it in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement is because of the fact that our programs are people-centered and we focus on a collaborative enforcement process. We were also asked to address funding for the marijuana policy program, which, just to clarify and further iterate, that this is a cost recovery-based program, not a fee or not a revenue-creating program. And we were also asked to address police enforcement and their response to complaints. So in terms of the licensing requirements for the proposed marijuana regulatory license, all licensees will need to display their city license. They need to ensure that no consumption takes place on the premises.
Or Commissioner, I was curious about the no consumption on premises. You go to a bar, order a drink, you can consume on premises. If you go to a cigar bar, buy a regulated product and consume it on the premises. The no consumption on premises, the rationale for that in this context is?
Teresa can chip in, but I believe it's because the state law that was passed by the voters says no consumption in public. And so a business is a public place.
Public accommodation.
Yeah. And we are, as Victor mentioned, we did hear during the town halls and through our outreach that there is some interest in looking at, could there be places to do that? It's a bigger question than we wanted to tackle under this program right now. So,
of course, one significant difference is if you go into a bar and someone else drinks, you don't consume alcohol. There's a slight difference in the secondary impact of someone else's conduct. But anyway, our current law, you believe the current law does not allow for on-premises consumption because of the no use in a public place.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification. So another component that we include is ensuring that businesses have a security system survey with surveillance. And the City of Portland is also addressing delivery services. So no delivery service unless specifically provided by state law under the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act by caregivers. For all marijuana retailers and medical dispensaries, they must have someone designated at the entrance to check IDs. The hours of operation must be no earlier than 7 a.m. and no later than 7 p.m.
9 p.m.
I'm sorry, no earlier than 7 a.m. and no later than 9 p.m. and must not set up mobile or satellite locations. So this would be include, farmers market stands, other stands, mobile carts, and so on. So they must be within the fixed location for which the license was authorized or granted. In terms of the licensee requirements for the proposed marijuana regulatory license, all marijuana producer and wholesaler licensees may not be open to the general public. And we did hear a concern in terms of potentially as they expand in, the social environments to allow for tours or a media entering these businesses. That would not be considered under what is defined as general public. So they also must install a filtration system for the building ventilation to address odor impacts to the community and surrounding areas. And all marijuana processor licensees must not be open to the general public and must adhere to state and local food regulations for food preparation. So I'll turn it over to Teresa to speak on the application process.
Thank you, Victor. So as we envision it currently, and through process mapping and talking with both OHA, which is the Oregon Health Authority, and the OLCC, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, we have developed what we think will be the process for applying for a city license and we've sort of detailed how it will interact with the state's process as well. On this slide, this is the application process for recreational marijuana businesses.
Sorry, but you probably don't want to use the infinity symbol for a regulatory process again.
For the licensing process.
There's a start and an end.
There's a start and end. There is an end. So initially,
I carried away graphically there's Teresa.
Maybe I did. There is, so to start applying for the city license, there will be, the applicant will submit their forms, and the minimum standards will be assessed by the City of Portland. At that same time, we envision that the application for a state license, that process can run concurrently. The state will request a land use compatibility statement from the City of Portland, which will cross over those minimum standards. Essentially, it's the same criteria that we would use to provide them with a LUX, an approval or denial. And if OLCC ultimately approves that application, then the city would issue that license. The application for the application process for a medical dispensary is slightly more complicated in that medical dispensaries currently exist. So, under the existing medical dispensaries, which we intend to begin licensing pending approval by City Council as of October 1st, follow the blue trajectory on this graphic. So, basically, they would apply for a city license. The City of Portland would verify that they actually have a valid registration with the Oregon Health Authority and that they are in good standing there, then would assess the minimum standards at that point, ensuring that we catch any of those compliance issues of which I talked about a little bit before, and then the city license would be issued. After that period in which we are licensing the existing medical dispensaries that open after October 1st of 2015 would follow a slightly different trajectory in that they'd be applying for a city license. Those minimum standards would be assessed that 1,000 foot from each other, from a school. Then we would be verifying that feedback loop would happen with the Oregon Health Authority where we'd be verifying a valid registration, and then the city license would be issued. I wanted to talk a little bit about the enforcement mechanism for this program as outlined in the proposed requirements and regulations. They may be subject up to $5,000 for $5,000 in penalties for administrative violations. That could be either for operating without a valid city license or operating in violation of a requirement of this chapter. We do have an ask for code enforcement staff that we will be further detailing in the fall bump, but it is requested as part of this presentation. That would allow for two-person teams to address compliance issues, basically north and south of Burnside.
Teresa, is the penalty component of this, is it a ladder where the first
yes,
time it's something and then it cumulatively at some point gets to 5,000?
Yes, absolutely. And we intend to reconvene the community work group to look at the regulations and define what will be essentially a Class D violation that would come with a much smaller potential penalty than a, for instance, operating without a license, which we would elevate to a higher level.
Is the general philosophy, though, sort of first violation is corrective?
Yes.
Multiple violations becomes a pattern, and therefore you use the hammer?
Absolutely. That's sort of the trajectory that all our livability programs follow. So it starts small, usually with a warning, with education. We envision that happening with first and second violations, and then after that, assessing civil penalties as the behavior becomes more prolific and consistent. So,
what do you need two person teams for? Why not one person team, or one person, I guess?
We want to ensure that. That there is a partnership there that it's really for safety purposes, so that if our staff is approaching these businesses, particularly the ones that are operating without a license, that they're doing so in partnership with another member of staff.
I mean, wouldn't you use police as a backup in that situation, or?
To get into that in the amendments.
Yes, we will.
And some reluctance from the police. That's part of the reason why we're proposing that the staffing be in ONI for the majority of the inspections and enforcement.
And does OLCC use two-person teams?
Yes, typically, at least with liquor. They're still currently hiring their enforcement staff for their marijuana program. And typically, I mean, this program is based on administrative requirements and administrative violations. And so I think that the reluctance on the part of the police bureau to designate resources for the enforcement of an administrative program is sort of similar to, for instance, the enforcement of our noise control program, which is also heavily administrative. Obviously, we would have some partnership with them, or at least we would hope to have partnership with them if it crossed over into the arena of criminal activity.
Mr. Fritz, if all else fails, you can lobby Dan and say that the Fire Bureau proposed two-person teams.
That'll be a bad idea.
Four-person teams.
And just to be absolutely clear, no criminal citations or enforcement will be conducted by this office, although we will have partnership with police if there are situations that arise that need their expertise. District Attorney Rod Underhill has also confirmed that his office will address violations related to minor access and public consumption, also outside of the purview of this particular program, at least in terms of enforcement. We will be engaging with the community on elements of education to that extent in a more informal capacity.
Is he seeking funding from us or the county or some other source?
I'm not sure. I'll have to get back to you on that.
We haven't had that. I haven't had that discussion with him. I was actually just at the Girl Scout lunch, and he and I had an ongoing conversation about this. The question had arisen, if police were to cite somebody for use in public, would the district attorney prosecute? And the answer is absolutely yes.
But presumably he will seek some funding source to cover that overhead.
Well, presumably when they prosecute, there's fines and such involved that we may or may not get.
So moving on to the fee structure, again, this council had asked when they approved the development of the marijuana policy program that it be developed in such a way that was cost recovery, and the fees reflect that. It's obviously difficult to project the number of applications, but we've been in conversations with Denver, Colorado, and with Washington, and specifically Seattle, Washington, on the distribution of their licensing and what they've seen. Denver, Colorado had over 900 licenses locate within their boundaries within the first year. Washington has a statewide cap that actually was recently increased, but for their 334 static locations statewide, they received 7,000 applications within the 30 days that they allotted for it. There's a lot of interest just right over our northern border, so we expect a lot of interest here in Portland as well, who is welcoming to the industry. So this assumes, obviously, medical dispensaries, we do have some information that there's about 132 that are operating. We assume the same amount for marijuana retailers. Obviously, there's a natural cap that's provided by the 1,000-foot buffer that we've proposed. Marijuana processors, producers, wholesalers, we've tried to roughly ballpark that number based on what we've seen in other jurisdictions, but in truth, we're not completely sure how many to expect. So the cost of administering the marijuana program includes the three positions approved by council previously, the livability programs manager, our marijuana policy program coordinator, Victor, and also our marijuana policy program assistant, who we hope to be hiring very quickly here. It also has an additional ask, again, for four policy code enforcement officers, and then a OSS2 support specialist. This includes basically all program costs, materials, rent, all of that.
So the intent is it would be revenue neutral, cost recovery, and that we will come in the full bump to ask for position authority.
Thank you, Commissioner. So in terms of next steps, this is actually one component of this one small-ish component of the overall marijuana policy program. As all livability programs, we look at what the regulatory framework is, what our needs are within our communities, and we try to respond to those through education, and as well as further work with policy, which, especially in this arena, we will be needing that. So we intend to move forward with an educational program with our partners in other jurisdictions, with the county, and also with our schools in particular, to address youth access, youth education. We will also be involved and ready to disseminate information related to DUII. We're also going to be embarking on an education program for the industry to make sure that they understand what the procedures are for application. We hope to partner with both the Oregon Health Authority and the Oregon Liquor Control Commission on that so that we're removing barriers as much as possible. We also will have the local tax option at 3% discussion that will need to happen, that council will need to have in the next coming months. And we will also...
Just to be clear on that issue, we're not deciding that today. The choices will be we enact a 3% tax, we send a 3% tax to the voters, we try for our 10% tax that we passed before the ballot measure passed, or we don't tax at all. Those will be the four choices, but that's not on the table today because we're not allowed to do any of those right now. Except nothing.
Thank you, Commissioner. And we will also be convening the community work group. They've done excellent work, and we're hoping that all members return to the table to begin this discussion around responsible social environments. We heard from a number of members that are concerned, where do I go if I want to consume responsibly, but I don't want to be around my children? Valid points, and something that I think garners greater discussion. Currently, the state licensing entity is not intending to license any on-site consumption, Commissioner Fish, which is what you are referring to when a bar is licensed for the sale of on-site consumption of alcohol. We're also in communications with individuals who want to do events strictly related to marijuana. There have been a number who have been extremely proactive, come in to speak to us about the do's and don'ts, best practices, those kinds of things. There's a number who have not. So we'll begin those discussions about how to ensure that those events happen in a responsible way. And also, this is obviously the first go-around for this proposal, and it was the first go-around for the state as well within their legislative session, and I imagine that there's going to be some more work to be done in the legislature in the coming one and proceeding ones after that. Commissioner, would you like to speak to the amendments?
Yes, colleagues, I handed out some amendments. This has been a continuing work in progress, and I don't anticipate that what we adopt today, hopefully, or next week, would be the final version. But yesterday, we realized there were a couple of Scrivener's errors, and
minor ones. There's a memo dated 9/15 that we handed out yesterday, and that's a Scrivener's error on Section 14 in Exhibit A. Section B, 130.020M is a duplicate definition and is deleted, which then reorders the other numbers in that letters in that section. And then in Section 14B, 130.080C2, instead of just saying Multnomah County, we need to say licensee must adhere to applicable state and local regulations. There are more than Multnomah County regulations. So that's my First Amendment move.
Do you want to move them as a package or individually?
I'd recommend as a package.
Okay.
Take it apart if we have to.
That's the first one. The second one is in a memo dated today. And the auditor very helpfully brought to our attention that the changes that we adopted on appeals to the code hearings officer change the amount of money and the regulations for appeals of the director's decisions on marijuana license approvals. And so we are proposing to change 14B 130, 120 to add review by the director and appeals to the code hearings officer, and then adding to 14B 130.070F that the director shall give the applicant written notice of the denial in accordance with the minimum requirements of Chapter 3, 130 of Portland City Code. I apologize to everybody listening. I know this is all administrative gobbledygook. It really is administrative gobbledygook. The intent is to make sure that we're not charging an excessive amount for an administrative appeal. And so the net result is a good thing for the community. And then we're also adding that same section to 14B 130.100B1. I'm required to say all this to get into the record. I apologize. Then in Section 14B 130.110B, the director is in accordance with the minimum requirements of Chapter 130 of Chapter 3 130 of Portland City Code. That's also added to 110C, and then this is kind of explains it better. In Section 14B 130.120, we had review by the director and appeals to the code hearings officer. Any determination issued pursuant to Sections 14B 130.070, 100, or 110, believed to be made in error, may be reviewed by the director if requested by the recipient. The request must be submitted in writing within 15 days of the determination and must include all evidence that supports the request. The director's determination shall be served by regular mail. The director's determination may be then appealed to the code hearings officer as provided by Chapter 2210 of the City Code. And that then changes the numbering on that. And then for the fee schedule, instead of the code hearing appeals fee of $1,750, the administrative review fee is $250. And then there's also a minor change to the Section 090 this one's a little different. This one is about police assistance, which is what Commissioner Saltzman was asking about. So I'll take a breath. That was the previous ones on the administrative fee. Then for Police Bureau protocol, we wanted to make sure, in partnership with the police, that it's clear what the police are and are not going to do in helping us with inspections. So Section 14B 130.090D3 will now say, police assistance in issuing an inspection warrant on an unoccupied property, including inspection warrants pursuant to 14B 130.090, the judge may authorize any peace officer as defined in Oregon Revised Statutes to enter the described property to ensure the safety of the director or the representative of the Bureau in completing the inspection. So that removes language that allowed the police to remove any person or obstacle and assist in inspecting the property in any way necessary. And so it's more in conformance with what the actual police do in other situations where there's suspected criminal activity. And finally, the last amendment corrects the fee schedule to have the administrative review fee be $250 instead of $1,750.
So is there a second to those amendments, and then we can adopt these if that's the council's decision, and then conduct the hearing and take testimony, and if folks disagree with any of these amendments, as well as whatever in the package as a whole, you can let us know.
And there are paper copies for anybody who felt as inspired by that whole recitation of Gobbledygook to want to actually read it.
And Mayor, just to be clear, by adopting them, we put them on the table for public comment.
Correct. And Captain Kruger's here from the Police Bureau. I think this ameliorates the Police Bureau's concern, but we can get confirmation about that. Or if there are any questions about the Police Bureau's role, he can answer them. But are there questions before we vote on accepting the amendments for public testimony? Roll call, please.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay. Anything else from Victor, you and Teresa before we
feedback or questions?
Just wanted to know if council has further questions for the staff.
Great PowerPoint.
Yeah, I don't have any further questions.
Dan,
Steve, anyone have further questions before we
move? We do have an invited panel, okay. And then we can get to public testimony. Thank you, team.
Thank you very much.
Folks should also know that online we have the proposed code, again, with the things that are in state law in blue so that it's really clear. And I want to thank the person who made that suggestion at the last town hall. I think that's really helped me understand where things are.
Okay. And your invited panel is...
You know who they
are. Come on up. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor.
Who'd like to start?
Go ahead. Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. Thank you. My name is Laquita Lanford, and I was a part of the Community Stockholder Work Group, and very thankful to have been a part of those conversations as a community member. And that feeling included in the conversation. I had spoke out before to a couple people that encouraged me to continue to want to do the work that I'm doing with organizing with people of color in the community to have those discussions about inclusiveness and in the business. That was the concern for me, safety and business practices and how those were going to be looking for people of color. And this is a new opportunity for our city and people that have been marginalized and that have not been included in the past but have been criminalized for marijuana. So taking a new approach with what we have in our city as rec is to, for me, it was just doing more of the outreach and just learning more and being able to connect and be an advocate for the community of color and rallying folks around to have some Know Your Rights sort of trainings. And I got some pretty good responses and like a lot of concern. So there's still work to do on that in that area. But as far as the community works stock group, it was very positive and I learned a lot and I was able to just be a part of that conversation and being at city and different events throughout the throughout Portland. So I'm still looking forward to, you know, connecting with the folks in the group and with the city and making sure that the community is connected, not just saying going to a website, but just giving them the information step by step for those who are wanting to be involved. So I thank you guys for the opportunity today to be here to speak on that.
Thank you, Mayor, Commissioners, for the opportunity to testify. My name is Amy Margolis. I'm an attorney with Emerge Law Group. We focus primarily on the cannabis industry. I'm also the director of the Oregon Cannabis Association. I was part of this group from an industry perspective and from a sort of boots on the ground legal perspective. We represent many, many people in this industry. I want to thank Mr. Salinas for allowing us to participate. I've participated in a lot of these, and this was the first one where it wasn't just law enforcement, industry, legislators. It really reached out to the community in a kind of special and unique way. So I'm very appreciative of that, and I think people felt very included in that process. There were a number of good pieces of this legislation. There were a number of pieces of this legislation that promote this industry, that keep communities safe, that focus on public safety, and I'm very proud of the work we did on those pieces. I do have a primary concern, and I need to explain, I think, what is happening right now for you to understand the impact a small portion of this legislation would have, and I think you're going to hear from other members of the community who are here about this issue. So the rules divide licensing into two groups for dispensaries, medical and recreational. Currently, medical dispensaries, and you saw from your PowerPoint, need to be 1,000 feet from each other. And they will, come October 1, start selling adult-use flower. They will be applying for medical licenses under the Portland licensing regime. So they will hold those licenses. Many of those medically licensed dispensaries intend to get recreational licenses. They have been operating. They have been up and running. They are compliant. They are, we heard the phrase, bad actors. These are the good actors who are participating and in good standing now. What has happened, and Victor reminded me that I objected to this during the meetings too, what this legislation does in creating 1,000 feet from each other within the medical program and within the recreational program, but not allowing a period of opt-in, not allowing those medical dispensaries to have first crack at the recreational Portland licenses, what you are doing is creating a situation, and it's a confusing issue, and I'm happy to talk it through, but what you are doing is creating a situation where existing medical dispensaries that have existing medical Portland licenses will not be allowed or able to become recreational dispensaries because a brand new recreational dispensary may get the City of Portland license first.
Because of the proximity?
Because of the, and I'm going to call it a false proximity designation. I just made that up right now. But I think it's appropriate. And that's because the statute doesn't have that requirement. And the OLC, I participate in the Licensing, Compliance, and Regulatory Committee for OLCC, and they are not imposing that. So this is unique to City of Portland. Other jurisdictions are doing other things. I'm also on the Clackamas Task Force. However, I have yet to see something that will pit medical dispensaries who are creating business plans. So a number of these dispensaries are expanding their square footage and putting additional registers in. They are actively seeking investment to expand to accommodate early recreational sales, and then to hear come October, when recreational dispensaries are licensed, that these medical dispensaries who have created whole business models around transitioning will not be able to transition to recreational is, I think, an unintended and an unfortunate consequence.
So you believe this is unintentional?
I do not. So we spoke about this. I apologize, Commissioner. I think that the City of Portland did not intend to create internal industry competition and to push out existing good actors. That's what I think is unintentional.
You know the problem we're trying to solve.
I do.
Yeah.
And so there are a number of suggestions and ways to solve that problem without directly and negatively impacting existing and operating medical dispensaries. You want the good players to stay. You want the people with internal and institutional knowledge to continue to participate in this program.
Here, Commissioner, because she represents an industry, can we extend
the
comment?
Yeah, no, I want to keep going. This is a useful discussion.
I think there's others who want to address this issue, and it was discussed at the task force.
But fair enough. But, again, because of her unique position in this, could we take an extra minute just to hear her proposal for what the fixes could be, just so we have those in front of us?
That'd be useful. So, how would you recommend we solve the problem of too many licensees in a small area? We've experienced that before with liquor licensees. We know what it looks like, and it's not pretty. So what would you recommend?
So, Mayor, Commissioners, thank you. By the way,
you don't have to call us Mayor and Commissioners. They do that in Salem, and it like gets in the way of all the testimony.
Yeah.
You can dispense with that, and we don't even need your address.
It's a good thing I don't wear my suit jacket either. The easiest solution, if you're trying to, and I don't speak for, and the other industry members maybe have an alternative solution, but I think if the goal is to address there being too much saturation, and I understand that is the goal, then the easiest way to solve that is just to have all locations, medical and recreational, need to be from 1,000 feet from each other. That would solve this problem completely. So if all licensed dispensaries, medical or recreational, were required to be 1,000 feet from each other, you would not have this issue.
Clear enough. Thank you.
Sounds elegant.
Who's next? We'll ponder that while we listen to Linda. We'll also listen to Linda.
Okay. good afternoon, Mayor Hales and City Council members. First time. Thank you for allowing me to testify. My name is Linda Nedekoven, and I am a community member of the Marijuana Work Group, and I'm representing only myself in speaking here today. I also would like to take the opportunity to acknowledge the excellent work of ONI staff. This is an incredible maze of information that they have helped to lead us through, and members of the group have also helped each other in terms of understanding what's going on. It's really been a great learning experience, as others have said, but I think it's, in a sense, priceless for what we're trying to accomplish here in Portland with these new regulations. I'm in support of the proposal before you, and I'd like to take my time to just emphasize what I think are the necessary, a few of the necessary next steps. In addition to the education and outreach efforts that were just mentioned, there's also the information form and the marijuana control plan, all of which I think could benefit from review by stakeholders. I'm glad you caught the omission of business districts. I was also going to mention that. And I think, again, training for coalitions, neighborhood coalition staffs, opportunities for neighborhood associations to begin to help to understand the implications of these new regulations would be really helpful in just terms of answering questions and being able to be resources for the community at large. I'm hoping the crime prevention staff isn't spread too so thinly that they can't occasionally step up on this one as well. I think one of my big concerns is the land rush, in a sense, that we're facing, and having enough resources to be able to answer all the questions, handle the applications, deal with community. And I guess the key effort here will be to manage community expectations, both in terms of how long licensing processing will have to take and how long, you know, education and other sorts of things will take to unfold. I think it's important that the information form in the marijuana control plan, we can see how many things there are to make sure are included, that we include the relevant information, and we don't develop things that are onerous for new applicants to be able to understand and navigate. Second, I was planning to chime in on the issue of saturation. I, of course, have no solution to offer, but I think this, I know there is fear out in the community that adding the marijuana dispensing establishments along with places that already have what might be called too many bars and perhaps in some cases adult entertainment venues is going to, in a sense, preclude the opportunity for those neighborhoods to become walkable because their business districts will lose some of that valuable real estate that could be devoted to the goods and services that people need for daily life. So I'm hoping that there are some good ways to deal with this issue of how many and located where. Third and finally, and you may think I'm contradicting myself here, I think the city really needs to explore the development of regulated private premises for consumption of marijuana. By coincidence, the luncheon speaker yesterday at the TREC Transportation Summit was Eric Kleinenberg, the author of Going Solo, who talks about the dramatic shift in our population and the numbers of people that are now living alone in our society. And that a piece of that, obviously, it's very important in terms of future transportation, land use, other kind of planning decisions we make. But the fact that so many people live alone means that many people then choose their connectivity by being outside in private spaces, public spaces, third spaces. That's their way to come together and connect with people. They're not doing it in their homes alone necessarily. So again, the idea of the social enterprise that's involved with consuming marijuana is something that we really need to address. It was on the list, but I just want to emphasize the importance of that conversation going forward. Again, I don't have answers, but I think it's really important to be considered. So I'll stop at this point. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
Great. Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. I'm Dr. Jennifer Vines. I'm a health officer with the Multnomah County Health Department. I'm a family physician by training, and I'm also board certified in preventive medicine and public health. Thank you for the opportunity to provide support for the City of Portland ordinance that facilitates the introduction of retail marijuana businesses. We at the county have been carefully tracking changes to state law related to both recreational and medical marijuana. And we know that this is new territory for elected officials and other government agencies. So like you, we are quickly learning and adjusting to this changing landscape. I'd like to just identify for you the four areas of concern to public health that we're tracking most closely. The first is that highly potent marijuana, either smoked or consumed, can easily lead to overdose. And we know that since retail sales began in 2014, Colorado's Rocky Mountain Poison and Drug Center has received over 70%